Genesis 27. We're not going to do any questions tonight by way of reviewing. And you'll get chapter 27's questions next week, simply because in order for us to get through all of chapter 27, which I'm not sure we're going to do anyway, we're going to have to just focus on that. And maybe we will get through, but we'll see. Raise your hand if you read Genesis chapter 27 in the last week. Okay, well, the rest of y'all work on 27 and 28 for next week. All right. Just brief outline of chapter 27 as far as the general contents. First 30 verses, or verse 1 through verse 30 is the deception. Verse 31 through 41 is the discovery. And verse 42 through 46 is the dismissal. And yes, I alliterated and I came up with it myself. I'm so proud. I said we wouldn't do any questions. By that I meant we're not going to go over any of the sheets of questions. But out of curiosity, how old was Isaac when Esau and Jacob were born?
No, he got married. Well, that was 61.
He was 60. They were born. All right. Does anybody know how old Jacob was when he died? I'm sorry. Hold on. How old Isaac was when he died?
He was an old man.
Yes. It is in. Chapter 35, I believe. Oh, I'm in Exodus, that's why. It's not in Exodus 35. 35, verse 28.
180.
180, okay? So, he was 60 when Jacob and Esau were born. He was 180 when he died. Now, does anybody know, and I simply ask this because we did talk about it in Sunday morning Bible class, however many months, a year and a half ago. Does anybody know how old Jacob and Esau were when chapter 27 takes place? Approximately.
400
years old. No. Say what? Yes. They were, based upon the information that we have, putting it all together, and it's a string of verses about 10 long, but it works out to the fact that they were about 77 years old when this deception of Isaac takes place.
But they're still at home.
The idea, Esau's married. As a matter of fact, he's married two women back when he was 40. So it's 37 years. But you have to keep in mind that basically, as sojourners, they moved as a family unit wherever they went. And so while they may not have been living in the same tent, dwelling place, or whatnot that Isaac and Rebekah did, they still lived in the same location.
That makes it sound up.
Yeah. So they were probably around 77 years old when this took place. So that brings me to this question. How old was Isaac? 137 years old. Okay. So said all that to say this. Chapter 27, verse 1. Now it came to pass when Isaac was old and his eyes were so dim that he could not see, that he called Esau his older son and said to him, "My son," and he answered, "Here I am." Then he said, "Behold, now I am old. I do not know the day of my death." At the time, Isaac was 137 years old. And what is true about that statement is Isaac was seemingly, and at least to some extent, poor health. Every time you find him, he seems by the context to be laying down, not up and about. His eyesight was to the point where he couldn't see. He couldn't distinguish one individual from another when they walked before him, even this close to his face. But all that being said, he's 137 years old, and he says, I don't know when I'm going to die. I wanted to make that point to make this point. Neither do we. None of us know when we're going to die. I doubt any of us in this room are going to make it to 137, but you never know. Little did he know, he had another 43 years left to live before he would die. So, at 137, he didn't know when he was going to die. He assumed it was going to be soon. He's got nearly another half century to go before he would die. But that being said, I wanted to make that point from the outset. So in the first four verses, we've got Jacob's request to Esau. Isaac. I even wrote it down wrong multiple of times, apparently. So we're going to try to fix that as we go along. Isaac's request. And Isaac said he was old. All right. Twice in two lines. He points out that he's poor eyesight, seemingly poor general health, but he will live approximately another 43 years. So he makes a request. What was that request that he made of Esau? Alright, please take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, go out to the field and hunt game for me and make me savory food such as I love and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die. Now, the King James calls it venison. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. The New King James just says, hunt game for me. Okay, so verse 5 down through verse 30, we have Rebekah's plan and Jacob's deception. One note that I want to bring out, though, before we get there. If you remember back in chapter 25, verse 23, as Jacob and Esau were about to be born, there was this unpleasantness in Rebekah's womb. And so she inquires of the Lord, and the Lord tells her, verse 23, two nations are in your womb, two peoples shall be separated from your body, one shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. Now, that has taken place, and it seems logical to assume that Rebekah probably told Isaac concerning what the Lord told her. There's no proof of that. But it seems logical that she would have. He would have noticed the issues going on, and he would have probably appreciated knowing there were going to be twins instead of just one. So, you know, it seems a good indication that a pregnant wife would have let her husband know. All right, so it's 77 years later, but the promise was made. The prophecy by God was made that Jacob would rule over Esau. But the problem comes in chapter 25, verse 28. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Okay? That's where the problem comes from. And as a result of this, Isaac is going to seek in either opposition to what God desired or in an attempt to bypass what God had said, Isaac is going to seek to give the blessing to Esau. Okay? if Isaac knew what had been promised, then he is intentionally bypassing that prophecy. Okay? That's the first significant thing to notice is that Isaac is trying to put Esau in the wrong position. Second point concerning that. We already know, based upon the information we've already been given, that Esau is not living a life that is correct in view of the covenant with God. Because he despised his birthright. He was willing to sell his birthright. He married Hittite women that are already causing a problem, according to chapter 26. And in view of the book of Hebrews that describes Esau as a profane man, and the reference comes back to chapter 25, all of that points to the fact that Esau was not worthy of this blessing, nor of the position it came with in the scheme of redemption.
But didn't God say the reason that he was passing his promise on to Jacob was because Abraham obeyed him? Not because Jacob did, but because Abraham did.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can see Jacob is full of flaws.
Mm-hmm. And so in view of all that, Jacob's full of flaws, Isaac's full of flaws, and Abraham is too. But in view of that, Isaac is not, is basically doing the same thing Sarah did in trying to give Hagar to Abraham. He's trying to do something instead of allowing God to do what God said. And so the results are going to be catastrophic for his family. So we come down to verse 5. Verse 5. Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to Esau his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt game and to bring it. So Rebekah spoke to Jacob her son, saying, "Indeed, I heard your father speak to Esau your brother, saying, 'Bring me game and make savory food for me, that I may eat it and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death.' Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you. Go now to the flock and bring me from there 2 choice kids of the goats, and I will make savory food from them for your father, such as he loves. Then you shall take it to your father, that he may eat it, and that he may bless you before his death." Okay? So, Jacob desires to bless Esau. Rebekah desires that... Isaac desires to bless Esau. Rebekah desires that Jacob be the one that is blessed. Now, that point that we made concerning the King James translation of venison. Today, what is venison?
Deer.
Have any of you ever had goat meat? No? Okay. Well, you may or may not be familiar with the fact that it tastes a whole lot like deer. No. The translation venison in the King James does not equate in our current usage of the term venison the way it did back when the King James was translated. The Hebrew term, which is, I can't probably even pronounce it, tasid, is hunted or wild meat, not specifically deer. Okay, so if you use the King James, you can put a little note there. It's not talking about deer. That was not Isaac's favorite food. What he wanted was wild meat, hunted game. Okay, and so Rebekah is going to take the goat and going to cook it so it tastes like wild game, not so it tastes like deer. Okay, so. Just clearing
what
that.
So, wild game be?
It's a common term for any general wild animals that would have been in that vicinity.
ESV called goats.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Because of goats.
So, wild goats could be. That wouldn't be unheard of for the Palestine Canaanite area. We don't know. The Hebrew word is a generic, just simply indicating that which is not tamed part of the flock, raised by someone. All right? So Rebecca hears and comes up with a plan. Realize that Rebecca is over 100 years old at this time. If Isaac is 137 and they got married when he was 40, if she's not at least 100, that would mean that she got married at 3. So she's over 100, probably well over 100 years old. We don't know whether she was younger than Isaac, older than Isaac. No idea. Well, we just know that she's at least 100 years old, probably 120 or more, and she's still willing to come up with a plan to get around her husband's desires. So, in verses 8 through 10, Rebekah gives the instructions to Jacob. He's to go out, find two choice kids of the goats, and she's going to prepare this meal for her husband. What does that tell us about Rebecca?
She knows how to cook.
She's a good cook. All right. She knows how to make food exactly like her husband likes. And apparently Esau got his cooking skills from his mother because she can make it exactly the way Esau would have made. Okay. So, verse 11. Jacob sees an issue with her plan. Verse 11, and Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Look, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I am a smooth-skinned man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be a deceiver to him." Seem to be a deceiver. "And I shall bring a curse on myself and not a blessing." But his mother said to him, "Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go get them for me." True or false? When you do something that is sinful, but you do it simply because somebody else told you to, it's okay. False. Okay? It kind of similar to when you're a parent and a child comes to you and they've done something that's wrong and they say, "But Freddie told me to." Well, that's all well and good, and Freddie's going to get his own punishment, but guess what? You're still going to get yours. Well, Sarah said, "Don't worry about it. I'll take the curse if you get cursed." Right. It doesn't really work out that way.
Was this just her way of going back to what was told her, that the elder serve the younger?
It's very possible that that was her motivation, but it goes back to the same issue with Sarah.
But she is saying that it's going to be a curse.
And it seems as though the concept of the curse here is not simply that Isaac will find out, because it's going to be inevitable that Isaac finds out. But when you look at these blessings that were given by the father, the patriarch, to the children, and you see them here, Genesis 49 with Jacob, Genesis 50 with Joseph, and a number of times throughout Scripture, Deuteronomy chapter 6, I believe it is, you have some recorded. They're more than just simply, "I think this is what's going to happen." Some of them, at least, were very much prophetic in nature. And so the view of a curse here is not simply the idea of Isaac finds out and he's displeased. It's the idea of, instead of blessing you in a prophetic manner, he will curse you in a prophetic manner. Okay? Which would come to bear not only on Jacob, but on his seed and so on.
See, look at the idea of the curse that falls on Esau and the Edomites, and then, but it still comes back to haunt Jacob, when they try to pass through the land of Edom and they won't let them through.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's going to result one way, and it's going to be a long-term issue. And Jacob says, I don't want that. Now, the second thing I want to notice is Jacob concerned about Isaac or Esau? No. His argument here is not, well, I don't really think we should do this to Dad. You know, he's old. He can't see. He's getting pretty close to dying. I don't think this is a good idea.
Let alone to God.
Nor is it, well, you know, this is kind of dishonest. This would be sinful. I don't think we should. No, not that either. Not even, well, he's planning on blessing Esau, and, you know, I wouldn't want to do this to my own brother of 77 years. No, not that either. Well, you know, I might get cursed, and that would be bad for me. Okay, so Jacob's only concern is for himself in this whole situation. And that's his only argument with doing it. So his mother defeats his argument, says, I'll take care of it. Just do what I tell you to do. So that's exactly what he's going to do. He's going to go out, verse 14, and he went and got them and brought them to his mother, and his mother made savory food such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the choice clothes of her elder son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And she put the skins of the kids of the goats on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. Then she gave the savory food and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. So he went to his father and said, My father, and he said, Here I am. Who are you, my son? Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done just as you told me. Please arise, sit, and eat of my game, that your soul may bless me. All right, so he goes out. He gets exactly what she tells him to get. He comes back, and she prepares it. She gets Esau's clothes. She puts the skin, the hair from the goat on his hands and on his neck. And really, to be honest, it's 90% Rebecca. But Jacob's going right along with it.
Okay? Two peas in the pod.
So he is absolutely as culpable as she is, and she's certainly as culpable as he is. So they are both fully involved in this going along. So Jacob comes to eat to Isaac. And he presents the food. He says, I'm Esau, your firstborn. I have done just as you told me. Please arise and sit and eat my game, that your soul may bless me. Lie number one. Okay? Keep track of these as we go through. As it gets deeper and deeper and deeper. But, you know, Jacob's lived with Esau for 77 years, and he knows just exactly how to say it just like Esau would say it. Because when you go over and see Esau come in, it's going to be almost the exact same words that Esau said when he came into his father. Alright? So, in verse 20, But Isaac said to his son, How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son? And he said, Because the Lord your God brought it to me. Lie number two. And after all, if you want to convince someone who believes in God that you're telling the truth, just invoke the Lord's name while you're lying to them, and they'll be even more convinced, okay? Which is exactly what he's going to do, all right? Well, how did you come back with it so quickly? Well, God blessed me. But notice the wording here, though. Because the Lord, your God, brought it to me. God, the implication, God's not only blessed me in preparing this for you, but God is blessing you in choosing to bless me. Okay? There's some underlying implications there. When, especially you consider that Isaac is doing the exact opposite of what God said would be the case. Okay? Or his intention is to do such, at least. Verse 21. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come near that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son, Esau, or not." All right, so Isaac's already suspicious. He's even more suspicious because of the time frame. And so now he wants to feel Jacob to make sure, because there's a very distinct difference between Isaac and Jacob. All right, so verse 22, so Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, and felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. But Isaac's suspicions aren't quite finished yet. Verse 24. Then he said, "Are you really my son Esau?" And Jacob replied, "I am." Lie number three. Three lies is what it took to get Isaac convinced enough to bless him. Okay? He said, Isaac said, "Bring it near to me and I will eat of my son's game so that my soul may bless you." So he brought it near to him and he ate and he drank him, or brought him wine and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, "Come near now and kiss me, my son." And he came near and kissed him and smelled the smell of his clothing and blessed him and said, "Surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Therefore, my God, give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. Let peoples serve you, and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you." So, he has him come near. He brings the food. He brings something for Isaac to drink. He comes near, and Isaac smells the smell of Esau. The smell of someone who works in the fields, is out in the midst of the fields. Now, this blessing, let's notice some specifics about it. First, he says the smell is of a field which the Lord has blessed. Okay? God had greatly blessed Isaac in his possessions, in that which he had, and it seems as though the implication is this continual blessing would be brought upon his son. He said, "Therefore, may God give you of the dew of heaven." Why would he say of the dew of heaven? Something unique about the area of Canaan is that the dew is, they have an early rain and a latter rain, but the dew during those off seasons is quite often so thick and so substantial that it's almost as good as rain, okay? And so the result was a land of plenty, which was sumptuously provided the water and the necessity in order to grow. And so the blessing of the dew of heaven is an indication of you not only have the rain, but you have the continual day by day provision of that which is needed to be prosperous. Okay? So he then says, of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Okay? So the fatness, what's the implication?
Bountiful.
Okay?
The very best.
Why would it be bountiful?
God had provided the conditions for it to be bountiful, and that was a result of the blessing.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
That belongs to the Lord.
Okay. Say what?
Doesn't fat belong to the Lord?
Okay. The fat belongs to the Lord. It is going all the way back to our discussion of Cain and Abel. And Lisa's point is what was in my mind. You don't have fat unless you have excess. Okay? Unless you have enough to not only provide for the need, but beyond that, you don't have fat. Okay? Because that's the buildup. Fat is the buildup of excess when your body's consumed everything it needs. Okay? That being said, if the blessing is of the fatness of the earth, it means your needs are provided for and beyond. Okay? Same concept with and plenty of grain and wine. All right? So bounty in the provision of the earth, bounty in the sustenance of the earth, bounty in the produce from the earth. Verse 29, let peoples serve you and nations bow down to you. Be masters over your brethren and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Here's where Isaac's blessing directly contradicts the prophecy of God. Prophecy of God was Esau will serve Jacob. And Isaac's desire was that Jacob serve Esau. Okay? It's going to work out the way God said it was going to. We'll get into that more.
You just have to think of it in the sense that Isaac thinks he's blessing Esau and not.
Correct.
It's as if Esau's in that situation being told that right now, not Jacob.
Right. Okay? So, he says, cursed be everyone who curses you, blessed be those who bless you. Anybody recognize that from somewhere?
Yes, what God told Abraham.
Same part of the covenant. Covenant that God made with Abraham was, those who bless you, I will bless. Those who curse you, I will curse. And that continues, and Isaac is again trying to put a direct connection to the covenant with Abraham and give it to Isaac. I mean, Isaac is trying to give it to Esau. Yes.
So, God giving the prophecy that the younger would serve the older was because he knew in advance what was actually going to happen. Is that correct? I mean, that was being said with this event, and you know, like in God's mind, it was already been done. Or if this had not taken place, something else would have occurred for Esau to serve Jacob.
Okay, hold on to that comment, and we'll get to it in a little bit because we want to bring something else into it before we get there. But I want to get through the Esau's situation coming in before we do that. So verse 30, now it happened, as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. So, and the Hebrew bears out the idea that basically Jacob walks out one door, Esau walks in the other. Okay, it's that kind of, as soon as one is done, the other is there. Idea. So, verse 31, he also made savory food and brought it to his father and said to his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that your soul may bless me. And his father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" So he said, "I am your son, your firstborn Esau." Okay? Isaac's reaction. Then Isaac trembled exceedingly and said, "Who? Where is the one who hunted game and brought it to me? I ate all of it before you came, and I have blessed him, and indeed he shall be blessed." Okay? So, here in verse 33, you have the realization and the recognition of what's done is done. All right? As far as the blessing was concerned, once that blessing was given, is it. Couldn't take it back. There was no alternative. The blessing had been made. All right? So, we're going to pick up verse 34 through the end of the chapter next week. But what I want to get to is Eddie's comment. In Romans chapter 4, I believe it's Romans chapter 4. It's not Romans 4. I think it's Romans 9. Yes, yes. Romans chapter 9. And let's actually start at just read it through to where we have some background and then we'll summarize at the end. Verse 1. "I tell the truth in Christ, I am not lying, my conscience also bearing me witness in the Holy Spirit, that I have great sorrow and continual grief in my heart. For I could wish that I myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my countrymen, according to the flesh." Who were?
Israelites.
Jews. Who was Israel? The person.
Jacob.
Okay. "Who are Israelites?" Verse 4. "To whom pertain the adoption, the glory, the covenants, the giving of the law, the service of God, and the promises. Of whom are the fathers, and from whom, according to the flesh, Christ came, who is over all, the eternal blessed God. Amen. But it is not that the word of God has taken no effect, for they are not all Israel who are of Israel, nor are they all children because they are the seed of Abraham. But in Isaac your seed shall be called." That, verse 7, is a reference to Genesis 21. Verse 12. All right. Verse 8. "That is, those who are the children of the flesh, these are not the children of God, but the children of the promise are counted as the seed. For this is the word of promise, at this time I will come and Sarah shall have a son. And not only this, but when Rebekah also had conceived by one man, even by our father Isaac, for the children, not yet being born, nor having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him who calls, it was said to her, the older shall serve the younger. As it is written, Jacob I have loved, but Esau I have hated." Paul's point in this whole context is Israel possessed a special place according to the election, the choice, read that word as choice, of God to put them in a specific place in the scheme of redemption. God chose Israel, Jacob, and his descendants above every other people in the world to bring the Christ through them. Not because they were better, not because they of deeds that they did that others did not, but because he chose them. Okay? And Paul's point to the Romans is just because they were chosen and they are a part of Israel doesn't mean that they're saved. God put them in a special position in view of the scheme of redemption. Now, to Eddie's question, did God know what was going to happen? Yes. Did God make a choice, though, between infant Jacob and infant Esau as to which one would take part in the covenant? Yes. And it wasn't based upon what was going to happen later. It was based upon God's choice. Okay? It wasn't based upon merit. It was based upon God's choice. That being said, God would have worked it out for Jacob to have received the prophecy, the promised fulfillment, without any lying, without any sinning. But instead, what happens is Jacob will bring it about, but not without consequences. Okay? So we'll get into more of that next week.